Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 372, recorded on August 8th, 2019. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iPhone. Wow, what is this podcast? iPhone Alley podcast. It's the.
Wow.
I don't know what we're doing. All right, it's time for the iOS show where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from Smile. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. What show are we on again?
I forget.
Cool. I can't wait to see what we talk about.
Yeah, so. There's actually a lot of, you know, we talked last week, like you do on a weekly podcast, but we never claimed that that's what we were doing. This is a canceled podcast.
Right.
But there's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. And the, I guess, the way that, you know, the first thing on here is that while Trump has decided to set a 10% tariff on Chinese imports starting on September 1st. Ming-Chi Kuo, our good friend, believes that the customers won't be affected thanks to proper preparation by Apple in terms of other manufacturing sites, likely mitigating the issues and the fact that their margins, I'm sure, are very, very nice. So
is he implying that Apple has the ability to mass produce iPhones outside of China?
I think that's the implication.
All right, because I have to call fakety fake, 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 fake on that.
Well, Apple's been expanding production in India and Vietnam as, you know, part of their strategy to diversify beyond China.
Sure, but that's not going to take the load that China has just for producing for the United States.
Right. Yeah. So to be fair, he believes that this is going to be more of like a 2 year after 2 years, they'll be able to really, really take care of that. So I think it's more of a, in the short term, they're just going to absorb those costs.
I'm having a hard time with that too.
Really? So you think they're going to raise prices?
I kind of do. I mean, wow. First, Apple, they really like their margins.
Well, I mean, the company's run by a money man, so.
And they're a publicly traded company, so they have a responsibility to shareholders. So I'm wondering if that would play into simply absorbing the tariff cost. Tariffs, they're almost never absorbed. They are almost always passed on to the customer. So, you know, people that think, oh, yeah, China will pay for this. No, U.S. citizens pay for this. It's an extra tax that we pay for buying these products. So an additional 10% over time, that adds up.
On a $1,000 phone.
Yeah, a $1,000 phone where you are selling millions of these, that's suddenly a lot of money.
And yeah, I know it's not going to be $1,000, 10% of it's $1,000 because there's like a big chunk of margin built onto that. It's not component cost. It's going to be more on that. Yeah.
It just seems like a lot of money for Apple to decide they'll just absorb. I mean, yes, there's a lot of nice people at Apple, but at the end of the day, this is not an altruistic company. This is a company that goal is to generate profit and to keep the shareholders happy. It yeah. just so happens that they do it in a way that generally makes us as customers happy because we like their products.
That's true. It'll be interesting to see if this ends up being, if they do pass along the tariff. That will, There's going to be a lot of upset people.
Yes, there will be.
And I mean, yeah. That's the idea, right? That's the idea with the tariff. Plain and simple, is it's going to upset the people who want the Chinese products, and it's going to mean that, you know, less people buy them. And so, you know, in a way, it punishes everybody but China.
Us.
Right.
Yeah, it punishes U.S. consumers.
Yeah.
And the problem that I'm seeing just from an overall perspective in this instance is that tariffs are being presented as something that China is paying, not U.S. citizens or U.S. consumers, which is patently false. This is something that U.S. consumers pay. So there are a lot of people that they don't understand how the tariff thing works. And so when they see the prices go up, they'll think that this is Apple just deciding they're going to gouge us, when in fact this is an increased cost of doing business, and increased costs typically get passed on to your consumers. This is the best economics podcast I've ever been on.
Yeah, I don't know. We should move on. But that's
okay.
We'll see how this shapes up. Obviously, if we do end up having to pay a 10% tariff, it's going to be a big deal. So we'll get back to it. We'll talk about the 2021 iPhone, because why not? According
sure.
to
we don't have the 2020 iPhone yet.
According to our boy again, Ming Chi, the 2020 iPhone, he believes, is going to feature a fingerprint sensing display in addition to Face ID. My favorite rumor, because it's what I want, and, you know, Skittles and beer and all that. So according to Ming Chi, we're going to get a fingerprint on display. And I believe this is going to be anywhere. So I think that the way that most smartphones are implementing this right now is there's a target area, and the way that Apple wants to do it is just be able to, wherever you put your finger, it can scan your finger. And it's a very Apple way of implementing this. So he believes that he's making this prediction based on the fact that fingerprint on display technology will improve significantly in the next 12 to 18 months in terms of module thickness, sensing area, power consumption, and the lamination yield rate. So he believes that that we're going to see that in 2021.
The whole fingerprint across the entire display thing, I remember that being a rumor before the iPhone X came out. And, you know, back then we were going back and forth. Rumors. Oh, it's going to do facial recognition. No, it's going to have under the display, anywhere you touch, fingerprint recognition. And then it was going to be, no, it's on the back. And then it was, hey, it'll be both. And so I guess now we're back to Apple's going to do both. And I suppose they could. But I don't know. I'm kind of feeling like now that they've gone to Face ID, that's where they want to take everything. I think they want to take the fingerprint out of the mix.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I might be wrong. And if I had the option of using Face ID or my thumbprint or fingerprint, whatever. There are times when I'm doing Apple Pay where I would prefer to use my fingerprint because it's faster. But generally speaking, I found living in Colorado, being able to use my face is more convenient because I can use my face year-round, whereas in the winter, I probably have gloves on, and now I can't use my fingerprint.
Yeah. Yeah, it is nice that you can use your face year-round.
Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose it's possible that when Phil Schiller said they always wanted to do Face ID and the technology just wasn't there initially, so they had to use fingerprints, that he was just taking a page out of the Steve Jobs playbook and saying, this is the best thing and we'll never do the other thing. And then when they do the other thing, they'll say, well, now this is the best thing, but it's okay now because we're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
That would be so Apple.
Again, yeah, that's completely exactly what Apple would do.
But that said, I'm kind of feeling like Face ID is where Apple wants to go with everything. So I'm expecting at some point that I will unlock my Mac by looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad other computers can't do that. Oh, wait. but in a way, I feel like you're right. It's possible that in 2021, we get this dual biometric authentication. And at some point, maybe a couple of years later, they just ditch the fingerprint again because Face ID has just gotten so good. Because a lot of people have issues with Face ID.
I have issues with Face ID. It works really bad for me first thing in the morning. And that's even with me trying to train it with my I just woke up face.
Mm.
And lately, I'm having trouble with it if I'm in a dark room. Like if I've gone to bed, the lights are out, and I pick up my phone and want to do something on it, you know, check email, whatever, I'd say most of the time, Face ID fails, which is weird. That didn't used to happen. Maybe I just need to clean the front of my phone.
Yeah. Maybe you're just dirty.
I'm a dirty, dirty guy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's turn to the next thing after that. UBS, according to UBS analysts, they're predicting a foldable iPhone or iPad by 2021 from Apple. Although there's no corroboration from the usual suspects. So if Ming-Chi didn't say it, it doesn't matter.
I wish Adam was here so that he could do his eye roll and then go on his Ming-Chi tirade.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. Ming-Chi's the man.
Yeah, well, he's the man occasionally.
I think we'll see foldable devices eventually. This goes without saying. Apple will do it when it, you know, doesn't seem like a crapshoot, because right now it's kind of a crapshoot.
It's a total crapshoot. I'm with you. I think we will eventually have a foldable iPhone or iPad, probably both. I saw a mock-up of a foldable iPad, and it folded lengthwise. So you had this long, thin thing. And at first I thought, well, that's really crappy. I'd rather have it fold in half the other way. So it's like an iPad mini until I open it up, and now it's a full iPad. But in the mock-up, with it folding the long way, it became sort of like a mini laptop. So you could fold it open to 90 degrees and have a right. display and a touch keyboard.
Mm, yeah, I guess.
But I still like the idea of it folding like a book.
It needs to fold like a book.
Yeah.
Wait, maybe we're both flipped the opposite ways. So when you say long ways, I am imagining the fold axis is parallel to the longer dimension.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And you're thinking that you'd want it to fold along the shorter.
Yes.
Dimension. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Apple Card. So some customers have been invited to an Apple Card preview, which is nice. Was that you, Jeff?
No, I still haven't gotten around to dropping my name in the bucket for that.
I dropped my name in the bucket like yesterday, so I'm guessing I won't get it at all.
No, you'll get it. It'll be like me when I get around to dropping my name in the bucket. It'll be like 2 years from now. They'll say, okay, now you can sign up.
Yeah, well, they know who we are, so they're not going to give us anything.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, so the idea of the way this works is, so once you're in the program, regardless of if it's a preview or the real thing, The Apple Card is available immediately within the app. However, you can get your physical card in the mail several days later, which is great. The cool thing about this, one of the neat little things is there's a case that the card comes in that has an NFC transmitter in it that, you know, you just kind of wave your iPhone next to it and it will activate the card that way.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Now, why would you need to do that if the card is active on your phone once you've been approved?
To activate the physical card.
Oh, the physical card. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Apparently, I'm a little slow.
That's all right. We got a little more detail from those folks who actually have started using it. The Apple Card uses MasterCard's network, which means that you're getting all of the benefits of a MasterCard card. And I don't remember. I feel like I use Visa for most of my stuff. So maybe I'm stupid for using. Yeah.
And I think isn't Visa the more widely accepted card?
Maybe. I don't know. I used to have a MasterCard back in the day, but yeah, most of my stuff is MasterCard. However, you get benefits such as fraud protection and identity theft protection, free ShopRunner membership that offers free two-day shipping from some websites, travel discounts and upgrades, MasterCard's exclusive special events, golf offerings, home rental discounts, blah, 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 that sort of thing. And more interesting than all of those things is the base APR has been moved from 13.24 to 12.99 thanks to the Fed changing whatever it changes to make that sort of thing happen.
Oh, well, see, now we're back to the best economics podcast ever.
Yeah, how'd that happen? We're so good at these number things.
Yeah, math. That's just so crazy.
Mm-hmm. Big bummer, though. I don't know about you, Jeff, but I use Mint a lot. Not Mint Mobile, our cool sponsor that we've talked about, but Mint, the financial tracking service that I think is owned by Intuit these days. Mm-hmm. And so for those who don't know, Mint, you basically sign in with all of your financial institutions and it kind of aggregates all that data and gives you nice, you know, budgeting and trending and, you know, all that kind of nice stuff to give you a good snapshot of, you know, how little money you actually have.
Yeah, good times.
So, unfortunately, the Apple Card does not support exporting data to financial apps.
Yeah, I heard that, and I don't get why.
Privacy?
Yeah, but if I'm opting in to downloading my data to another service, then that's me doing that.
Yeah. Well, so maybe Apple thinks we're stupid for doing such things. I sometimes question whether or not it makes any sense for me to do it.
Yeah.
Because I am literally giving all of these sites my password, my username and password. Although I think it's like a third-party authentication thingy now. It used to be like, here's my password, have fun with it. Don't do anything wrong.
Yeah, but now... You're right. I think it's...
I think it's above board. I think it's a portal sort of setup.
Yeah, and there's a lot of value in being able to have all of your account data in a single place, like in your case, Mint.
Yes. Yeah, and you know what? It kind of aligns well with what Apple is kind of promoting with Apple Card. See, it's a little odd. At the same time, you might argue, well, maybe Apple wants to do their own thing, but at the same time, there's a big difference between, you know, allowing third-party access and providing your own homegrown version of Mint.
We haven't seen any indication or heard any rumors that Apple's actually doing that.
Right. So, yeah, it's more of a not at this time kind of response from Apple, so it's possible... that at a later time. And it may in fact be related to simply the, you know, needing to set up the portal stuff. And I've certainly had issues with Mint integrating with certain services. I'm surprised that it works with Venmo, although for the last several months it wasn't working with Venmo.
Well, that's awesome.
So,
well, I can get why Apple wouldn't have something like, you know, like integration with other financial management apps, or even having their own thing, like they have the health app for all the health kit stuff. Because, you know, it's not like they would have known that they're working on this whole credit card thing. So, of course, it was a big surprise.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. So with that, we should move on to our sponsors, and we'll be back in just a minute after those messages. Our sponsor this week is Simply Safe. Did you know on average it takes police 45 minutes to respond to a home security alarm? Almost an hour. When a home security system is triggered, a lot of the time police assume it's a false alarm and the call goes to the bottom of the list, but not with Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe has video verification technology which helps police get on the scene up to 3.5 times faster. Simply Safe can visually confirm that a break-in is happening and let the police know, making their average police response time just 7 minutes. Simply Safe also protects every door, window, and room with 24/7 professional monitoring. They make it easy on you. There's no contract, hidden fees, or fine print. It's won a ton of awards from CNET to the New York Times Wirecutter. Prices are always fair and honest. Around-the-clock monitoring starts at just $15 a month. They sent me one, and I've been very impressed with its integration with iOS. I was even able to set it up with Homebridge so I can control it from my Apple Watch. And for our listeners, Simply Safe has a huge deal going on right now. Go to simplysafe.com/tios and get free shipping and money back guarantee. That's simplysafe.com/TIOSS. Check them out today. simplysafe.com/tios. We thank them so much for their support.
All right. So with that, this is a pretty interesting story. So at, at Black Hat Security Conference, Apple has given security researchers, or they will be giving security researchers, a special iPhone for bug testing and increasing their macOS bounty programming. According to Forbes, Apple is going to be providing security researchers, and they are going to be, trusted and vetted security researchers and hackers with quote unquote development iPhones, which provide
jailbroken iPhones.
Are they jailbroken?
That's the word that I kept hearing tossed around, is jailbroken iPhones.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, it sounded like, based on what I saw, you know, I saw mention of like SSH and let me see. I thought there was a... Yeah, it comes with SSH, a root shell, and advanced debug capabilities.
Yeah, when I first heard about this, I assumed people were joking. And then I found out, no, in fact, Apple's actually doing this. It's pretty wild and also pretty cool. It tells me Apple is
very serious about security.
Serious about the security stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. So in addition to that, you can be able to stop CPU, inspect memory. We're all assuming that you won't be able to decrypt the firmware.
That seems like a safe bet.
They're also, like I said, expanding to macOS now, the bounty program to macOS, which is great.
Also stupid that it wasn't there already.
It's kind of mind-boggling, and it's surprising. It's shocking that they didn't have it before, but now they do have it. The bounties have also increased, with a maximum of a $1 million bounty payment for a zero-click kernel code execution with persistence, which is crazy, but you know, also that bug would be incredible.
That would be a very valuable bug. So it makes sense Apple would take that very seriously.
Yes.
Wow. No, I think it's very cool that Apple's doing this. And then I'll say what I said before. It's crazy they weren't this deep into doing the whole let's get serious about security and bug or vulnerability tracking before now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's they caught a lot of flack for not having this sort of stuff set up, and they've slowly providing these services and allowing people to paying out bounties and that sort of thing. And I think that they really wanted to do it in a way that made sense for them from a, you know, security standpoint for themselves. And I'm glad that they seem to have forged ahead with trying to make it work, because I think that people in the past year or so, hackers have proven the value of third parties discovering these vulnerabilities.
Yeah. So, all right, go Apple.
Yes. And iOS 13, we got some more betas that came out. So they seeded the sixth developer beta of tvOS 13, watchOS 6, iOS 13, and iPadOS. And of course, there are public betas for iOS, iPadOS, and tvOS, not watchOS. Over and over again, I will say, do not put a beta on your watch unless you have a spare watch, because man, oh man, that seems like a bad idea. And you can't downgrade. Yeah. You have to bring it back to the store, and they have to ship it off to flash it for you, which is crazy.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so don't do that. However, in addition to bug fixes, and I've been running iPadOS on my iPad and enjoying many features in spite of the bugs, and they are numerous. So in beta 6, developer beta 6 / public beta 5, they've added a dark mode control center toggle. So now instead of long pressing on the brightness and then toggling from there, you just have a one-click toggle, which is nice. They tweaked I'm not a big fan of the dark mode on my devices.
You know,
I keep trying
dark
it.
Mode, yeah. It's the thing for me is most of the apps where I really want to have dark mode, they built it in already.
Right. Yeah. I don't want I feel like the experience is it's off otherwise, especially when browsing the internet and that sort of thing. It's, you know, just it feels incomplete, and I don't know. I just keep coming back to it, but there are a lot of people out there who really appreciate it. So it's great that it's in there, and it's even better for them that it's quicker to access. They've also tweaked the folder transparencies. They look a little different and I'd say nicer.
I agree.
You can hide link previews. So when you do your long press, you know, the what is now the new 3D Touch, right now it will show you a link preview, which is something I want, but you may not want that, especially if you're, you know, perhaps clicking on something that,
like maybe worried about a tracking cookie.
Exactly. Yes. So you can turn that off if you want. You can, and I believe you can turn it off for specific sites as well. There's now a three-finger tap where three finger tapping anywhere in iOS will bring up an undo, redo, cut, copy, and paste icon at the top.
Is that showing up for you when you're on the homepage also?
I haven't
because
actually
it did
tried
for
it.
Me.
I haven't tried it actually.
It just seems like a weird thing. So I'm assuming that they're going to change it so that places where you actually wouldn't use that, it doesn't show up. But
yeah,
it happened on my iPad Mini.
That was mentioned as a potential bug for sure. Okay, yeah, it's happening on the home screen.
which, you know, why would you need that? Right. But hey, it's a nice little thing otherwise.
Yeah.
Oh, good. And the recording stopped because the disc is too slow. That's fun. Anyway, we should be okay now. What else?
I have a question for you about the betas.
Yeah.
Okay, so for previous iOS betas, by the time we get to beta 4, beta 5 at the latest, developer betas, I'm running that on my main iPad. This year, I'm still here. We're at developer beta 6, using just the sacrificial iPad, which is my iPad mini. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, am I being overly paranoid, or am I being smart by not putting developer beta 6 on my iPad Pro?
Well, I guess it depends on how important your iPad is to your workflow.
Yeah, and it's pretty important. But I have found it interesting that in the past, even with my iPad Pro being very important for my workflow, at this point, being this close to September, I was comfortable putting the beta on a production iPad. And this year, I just feel like iOS 13 is held together with duct tape and baling wire.
It does feel like that. I think there's just a lot going on, a lot that they've changed, a lot that they've improved, and it's, you know,
it's just a huge overhaul.
It's just tough. I agree. Just the slide over feature has just been super buggy. Thankfully it seems like it's finally working, like where you can actually dismiss mm-hmm. windows. Although I have this weird bug, tell me if you've seen it, where draft emails in the mail app keep showing up at the bottom even if you dismiss them.
Oh, I will try that. I'll let you know.
I mean, I haven't made another draft email.
I do so little email composition on my iPad mini that just doesn't come up for me, but I can make it come up for me.
Yes, please do.
Yeah. And I just want to be clear. I'm not bagging on iOS 13.
No, you're a jerk, Jeff. You should stop.
You're a real
meanie for what you're saying about
to the core
iOS. Yeah. It seems like, for these drafts just, don't go away. Although I made a new one and it did go away, but the other two that were in there from like before don't go away. So that's cool. There's a lot of fun stuff happening. I love beta testing software. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, this is beta software. I don't expect it to work the way I expect an official release to work.
Yeah. In other news, we talked about the volume tweaks and we're back to 16 increments of volume.
I'm kind of bummed about that.
I am not. I thought it was too much. I think they tried it. They're like, hey, here's a squirrely idea. Let's give this a shot. And I think enough people were like, nah.
I have a feeling I just figured out why you didn't like it and I did. When you put the volume up or down, you're probably going tap, 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 tap on the button, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I press and hold.
Yeah, that's insane.
So for me, it totally made sense because now I had much better control over what I was doing.
Sure, yeah.
But if you're going press, 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 and now you have to press twice as often,
yeah,
twice as many times,
yeah,
I can see where that would get kind of sucky really fast.
Yeah, and if I want grosser control, I just grab the slider and crank it up, really.
Yeah.
And if I want to mute it, I, you know, hold down the down volume.
Yeah.
So.
And for me, I've developed the ability to know how long I can hold before it just jumps to mute. So wow. I do this Fast slide. Oh, and I'm at the volume I want. I almost said I'm at the temperature.
That is like the lamest superpower I've ever heard.
Yeah, I know. It's really bad.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what they, maybe they'll put it back in the next beta.
My guess is that it's just gone.
It's probably gone. And they're adding in the background location warning. So if something's been like, hey, where is he? It'll let you know, which is great. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Have you seen the new dialogue for stuff that wants to use your location?
Wants to use it. I may not have.
Or where it's been using it.
Yes, I did.
And you know the thing that comes up and says, hey, this has been using the location in the background. Do you want to let it keep doing that? It tells you more information now.
Yeah, Google Photos has used your location 75 times in the background during the past 3 days. Do you want to continue?
Yeah, and to me, that's a lot more useful than saying it's been using it in the background.
Yeah.
So I like that change.
Yeah, because if it's like it used it twice versus... Yeah, absolutely. That little bit of insight really changes it for you.
Yeah.
And if you think about it 75 times, you're just going to be like, no, that's insane. It's excessive.
Yeah. And maybe there's a little bit of passive aggressive developer shaming going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm okay with that.
Totally. There's totally passive aggressive developer shaming. It's not even passive.
I'm okay with that.
It's just aggressive.
Yeah, it's straight up aggressive.
This is fun. We always like to talk about right to repair. And so, of course, right to repair advocates are continuing to lobby the U.S. government, and those companies against right to repair are lobbying their case as well. Recently, the right to repair or the Repair Association's executive director, Gay Gordon Byrne, wrote that manufacturers have no reasons for blocking repair other than money. However, an Apple spokesperson told Axios that Apple's goal is to ensure that its products are repaired safely and correctly. And the quote was, we want to make sure that our customers always have confidence in their products will be repaired safely and correctly and in a way that supports recycling. We are continually growing our network of certified technicians and most recently added Best Buy. So, I mean, the way I look at this sort of thing is it's not so much, I don't go to these third party repair venues because I don't trust them.
Same here.
I just straight up don't trust them. And I hardly trust Apple certified places too. I certainly wouldn't take it to Best Buy last year. I might be okay with it now that they're certified. But this is more for my personal capability, with right to repair and the way that they're manufacturing things and how, it's becoming harder and harder to do that myself. Now, I understand in a lot of situations, for example, the Apple Watch, it's waterproof. I really appreciate that fact. And, you know, I've been, of course, in the last couple of months, I've been dealing with my Apple Watch Series 1, just the battery life being crap. And it'd be nice if I could do that myself. And I really, I could actually do it myself. It takes a lot of doing. If it just had a couple screws and a gasket, I probably would have done it. Mm-hmm. But I think that the features that Apple brings without having to worry so much about repairability, at least consumer side repairability, makes up for that in a lot of situations. However, there's the iFixit story that came out today, and we know which side iFixit lands on, so there's certainly some bias here. However, they believe that Apple, they call it locking, that they're locking iPhone batteries to discourage third-party replacements. So replacing an iPhone battery with a non-authentic one will display a battery health message saying that the battery needs service and that it's, inauthentic and it won't give you health information. But the battery does... function.
Yeah. So saying it's locked, that I don't think that was a good way to describe that.
No. Yeah, I don't agree. Yeah. Or I agree that it is not the right way to have described it.
Yeah, that was, to me, it felt sensationalized.
For sure, yeah.
Now, that said, I can see why a lot of people would be pissed off about Apple saying, or doing something where if it's not an official Apple battery going into the phone, that it's going to display this message and not give you vital data about your battery usage. I can see where people would be pissed off about that.
Well, yeah. So the way that Apple provides the information is not just a straight up, here's your cycle count, here's your capacity, right? Like it's not a bare bones technical thing. It is this is the health of your battery. It is this amount of health. And unfortunately, the batteries that you find, the third party batteries, the cheap ones that you can find on the Chinese market, often misreport one or more statistics about the battery, just straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, number one can be dangerous depending on the severity of the misreporting and how they have it set up. But number two just doesn't work out potentially with the algorithms that they're using to show that. One could argue that Apple could just straight up show the cycle counts, but that's not Apple's way. I would like to see a little bit more, investigation into, how truly locked down this is. You know, could you, if you transplanted a brand new battery from an iPhone into a different iPhone, would it display this because you haven't, you know, locked it, or because it's locked down to a specific iPhone, or is it more of an authentic iPhone thing? Because there are certainly batteries out there on the market that say, this is an Apple battery, has the Apple logo and all the stuff on it, but it's just straight up not an Apple battery.
Right.
It's a forge. So I'm kind of between the two. I'm certainly on the side of right to repair, but at the same time, I understand there, especially with batteries, you have to be careful.
Yeah. Batteries, that we take them for granted, but they can be really dangerous.
They store a lot of energy, and if that energy comes out quickly in an uncontrolled manner, you're not going to have a good day.
That is so very true. Yeah. Is Apple saying anything about if this whole battery thing is also to protect the components in the iPhone?
I mean, I guess I think that's probably a majority of the implication. I would say it's less a public safety thing and more of a protection of the device, and quality of the experience.
I totally get Apple wanting to have total control over the experience, because you put a third-party battery into an iPhone, it doesn't work right, and now you tell people your iPhone is crap. And your iPhone may be fine, it's just the battery that you put in it is crap.
Sure.
But at the same time, I really miss the days of my Pismo PowerBook where I could open the thing up and replace the hard drive and the RAM and throw in an airport card. I could do all kinds of stuff inside that computer. And it was just super easy to do.
Yeah.
And now I can't even upgrade the RAM on my MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. Let alone, you know, pull the drive if you have a failure or you want to make a backup or something like that.
Right. Yeah. The last time my computer went in for repairs, they had to replace the logic board again, which meant that I needed to restore my hard drive from backup or my SSD from backup.
They didn't have the
it's soldered.
They didn't have the magic tool that would bridge the two.
No.
That's unfortunate.
I agree.
Do you have which vintage do you have?
I have the 2016 Touch Bar, so the first generation Touch
Bar. Okay, yeah, so they should have been able to do the Vulcan mind meld between the two.
And yet they didn't.
Well, that sounds lazy to me. But anyway, you know what? This is why I'm glad Adam's not here, because I feel like Adam would be like, no, this is ridiculous. Right to repair is stupid. And that's
okay,
how Adam sounds.
I get where Right to Repair started. I mean, this was about John Deere tractors. And to me, the idea that a farmer can't fix his own tractor is fracking insane. And so, of course, that spread to include all different types of devices. So I love the idea of Right to Repair, because I would love to be able to do upgrades on my computer myself, when in fact I literally cannot have any upgrade done on my computer ever. But at the same time, I get why in certain product markets you would want to lock down what people can do. You know, for safety or security, or there are different reasons that you may want to limit what people can do with their own devices. So I guess I'm all wishy-washy on this one.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about our picks. Because I bet you have something good, and I have something good as well.
I have a pick that I just absolutely love. And what I'm hoping is that this becomes, at least for a short window of time, a time suck for you.
Oh, awesome. I'm very resistant to your, I'm quite immune to your time suck. Picks, but we'll see,
because this time it's not an app, it's a streaming TV series.
Uh-oh. Okay.
The Boys on Amazon Prime. And okay. It's based on a comic book series, and the premise is that you have superheroes all over the world, but they're generally amoral people. And so you have this small group that has decided they've had enough. And so they are fighting back against the superheroes and what they see as a potential takeover of the city or people in general, the government, whatever. And it is an amazing series. It's done really well. It honors the comic book series very nicely, even though they have to do some different things. But it's a wonderful series, and it is so not for children.
You said it's on, is it on Amazon?
I believe The Boys is Amazon Prime.
Great. All right.
It is a very grown-up series. And it is wonderful.
It looks like it, yeah. Awesome. All right, so my pick is... Can you guess, Jeff?
Your pick is The Boys.
No, it is Trader Joe's chocolate meringues.
See, I didn't want to say it because I thought you were going to say it wrong. And so that's okay.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice to have Trader Joe's nearby?
Thank you, Trader Joe's, for being in my mouth and near my body.
So what you need to do is go and get a box of the Trader Joe's chocolate meringue cookies. Go home. and start binge watching.
Yes.
The Boys.
Yeah. And you know what? You know what's great? You know why I love Trader Joe's chocolate meringues? Or chocolate chip, I should say. They're chocolate chip cocoa meringues. So, I was surprised. I look at these things, and it says cocoa in big letters, and it says meringues, and they're these little puffy things. I haven't had them before. And I thought, cocoa, and they're, the volume to calorie ratio is very high, which is great. That's, being on a diet, that's something I'm looking for. And I was pleasantly surprised by the fact that there are these itty bitty little chocolate chips embedded throughout the whole thing.
Now, see, that's just a fun surprise.
It's a little, a fun flavor explosion, right in there. And, I haven't tried, they have the vanilla ones, but the chocolate ones are rather good. At first I was a little put off by them. But my second go, was good. And it's exactly what I did. I sat down and watched some stories, some TV last night with my meringues, and they're not expensive. And, I like them.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So go eat some meringue because, it's cheaper than a tractor from John Deere or whatever.
It is. It's a lot cheaper than buying a John Deere tractor.
And you don't have to repair it. You just eat it.
Yeah.
Don't have to worry about the battery
TV
exploding.
To watch.
Yeah. So there you go. You're welcome, listeners. All right. So with that, you can find our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes. Give it some stars. Tell a friend. You can send your feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. And all of our advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet is at Smile Software and smilesoftware.com and at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's always awesome. I have so much fun with you.
And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. With that, we'll see you next time on the iPhone Alley podcast.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? They have to get them and put them away.